So, my motto for that I've been living by since I was young was drive like a girl. What's up, guys? I hope you're ready for not only a new episode, a new team member, but also a little bit of English again. I reached all the way over to the United Arab Emirates in order to get our new team member in. I'm so excited. And again, I need to tell the story a little bit of how this happened. I've been following her on Instagram because of her incredible and inspiring path for, I don't know, over a year maybe. And actually, I've never tried to reach out over Instagram. I can't tell if that would have worked out or no. But on LinkedIn, I have asked my network who I should interview live on LinkedIn because that's another thing that I do. And one of them suggested her. And I was like, no, she's not the right person for LinkedIn. She has to be our next team member. And here we are. It's literally been such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for making the time. Thank you so much for being so open and honest with us. She tells us everything about how she got into racing. She's telling us about the adversities and what it really takes to be the only girl, not the only, her sister's out there too, but one of the only girls on track. We're talking about mindset. We're talking about her head coach, a new one, yet again, very excited to share that one with you. And of course, she tells us why we have to believe in whatever we want to achieve. So get ready for our new team member. Get ready for our first Rob team member. Here is the one and only Amna Al-Kubaisi for you. I love it. I definitely love it, but you definitely have to elaborate a little bit on that. What does it mean to drive like a girl?
To drive like a girl, I mean, I used to see people like using that term as like an insult, and I did not like that, and I wanted to change that perception. So as I started to like be within the pace and I started to win races, I had, mechanics coming to me and drivers and like, "Oh, you're quick." And I'm just there and I'm like, "Yeah, you need to drive like a girl." So they don't take it as an insult anymore. So
I love that. I love that. It's all about the mission. It's all about the big picture. And I can imagine, and I'm hoping that we're diving a little bit deeper into everything that goes along and goes into driving like a girl. But let's introduce you to our audience to begin with, for starters. So thank you so much for making the time and being on the team and becoming a team member now. Amna Al-Kubaisi.
pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And every team member, Amna, has to do a little work here in the podcast, not only tech on the technical side, which you've already passed, but also content-wise, because my team members always have to introduce themselves by themselves. So if we would meet randomly on the street, what would you tell a person? What is Amna Al-Kubaisi about?
See, it's funny because usually when people ask me what I do, and when I find out like they don't know what I do, I just keep it that way.
Oh, really? How so?
Because like I don't want them, to change the way they are with me. Like in university, I kept it very low key. Nobody knows what I do. Nobody knows who I am, and I just like it that way because I don't really get much of attention. So I keep me.
Interesting.
I always keep it like that. But if someone do want like asks what I do as a hobby, I'm like, "Oh, I like cars."
Well, you can't keep it from us today. So you are the first Arab female Formula 3 driver. What else is it that we need to know about you?
I've been the first female to win a Formula 4 race at the Grand Prix during F1. And I was the first...
Which one was it, actually?
Formula 4 race.
And, I mean, which Grand Prix was it?
At the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix in 2019.
Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I was the first female Arab to win a karting championship in the UAE. And I was the first female Arab to compete abroad and claim top 5 in karting. So I've been doing pretty well for like my short time in karting.
Oh, yeah, and pretty well across karting for sure as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you started the whole racing career. You started when you were 14, you started in karting, and then pretty quickly moved up the ladder, if I can call it that, into Formula 4, into Formula 3 in Asia. Maybe you can tell us about the initial impulse to get into the car.
Yeah, so like the way I started was my father is a racing driver himself, and I used to be doing gymnastics before for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So my dad would come over and he would bring like drivers, he would bring the team over for dinner, and you know, like I was interested in their conversation because they seemed very passionate and you know, very like into what they were saying. Mm-hmm. So I never had this conversation in gymnastics with my friends, so I was like, I wanted to like try this sport.
Ooh.
So yeah,
so the passion caught you.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, so I was like, if they're very passionate about it, then it's quite nice. Like I think it's an interesting sport. So yeah, and I what I liked about it is like there's no segregation, like boys and girls compete in the same category, which is interesting.
Well, but which is unfortunately not the norm until now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're when you're saying no segregation, really, I've only touched motorsports like a little bit so far. I've been with the Takoya Porsche Formula E team. Actually, you've raced a Formula E car as well. Mm-hmm. I've heard that. And I've been in Le Mans, actually, last month, which is one of the races that your dad has been racing
oh,
in,
wow.
Which is really cool. So if you're saying there's no segregation, really, what does it feel for you to be in this area of sports? Because I've heard an interview where you're saying in the beginning it's been super tough for you because you've been, like, been pushed off the track. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you haven't been really accepted.
Yeah, in the beginning, like, boys were boys. They don't like a girl being ahead. So, as they would, you know, push them out or, like, bully on track. So, in the beginning, it was quite tough until, like, I had to prove myself and prove that I have the mm-hmm. pace and that I deserve to be on grid as much as the other drivers. And then, like, through time, I started to gain that respect, and they were not really, you know, pushing me anymore because I started to push back. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So now they started to get used to me as a driver.
What would you say did that do to you, like being bullied, whatever that means in concrete, and being not respected on the track? What did that do to you, and how did you respond to that? Because I care so much about, you know, especially looking at females in the sports industry, what does confidence mean? Where do they take the motivation from to not mm-hmm. stop where it gets uncomfortable?
Yeah, so when I used to like get pushed out a lot, I would sometimes when they would call us to the stewards, I wouldn't even stand for myself. Mm-hmm. Like I was, you know, completely just, you know, accepting
shy.
And shy, and like I didn't want to cause problems. I didn't want people, like the whole grid, to hate me. Mm-hmm. But then like my coach told me, you need to stand up for yourself. You shouldn't like stand up for your card, stand up for your team. You're not standing up just for yourself. You're standing up for like the whole team. So
interesting.
Yeah, so I just, you know, then I realized like, oh, I should actually like stand up for myself. And with time, you know, I started to push back, I started to gain confidence, I started to, you know, shout back when I get yelled at. So the sport really taught me how to stand up for myself and to be confident.
That is so cool. And I can imagine that the coach played a big role in that too, like encouraging you to take responsibility. And that's so cool, not only for yourself, but for the entire team as well.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree, yeah.
That is so cool. Hey, Amna, I was wondering, Googling you a little bit, you've been born in the US, actually?
Yes, I was born there, yeah.
And did you grow up there as well? Because your English sounds so American too, and I was struck by that. You've got a great English.
Thank you. I was there till like around 3 or 4, and then we came back to the UAE. I can remember slightly, like I remember my babysitter, mm-hmm. and our apartment and our cat. But other than that,
the cat.
Yeah, we had a nice cat. And then, yeah, we came back home, back to the UAE. And I remember telling my dad, I was like, where are we? Like, what is this place? It looks so different. So, yeah.
But that's, I guess, the place where you started racing. So it's exactly where you need to be. Really, really yeah. cool. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about how a driver can evolve within the system of the different Formula series. So you started in karting, mm-hmm. then you moved into Formula 4, and now you're racing in F3 Asia. I didn't even know there was different, like, local or regional Formula 3 series. How does it work? Do you have to qualify through races? Do you have to, buy a seat like it works in Formula One? How can you advance?
Yeah, you have to buy a seat like a year ahead, because then the seats fill out. So depending on the team, even the team, like, they get to decide whether they want to accept you or not. So mm-hmm. there's also, you know, the team's perspective. There's Formula 3 Asia and then the FIA Formula 3. So Formula 3 Asia and Formula 3 Regional. They are a bit slower, but they're very heavy. They're heavier cars, and they're much more difficult to handle. And yeah, it's like the first step before stepping into FIA F3, so that when you enter FIA F3, it gets easier to handle the car because it's much lighter. And then, you know, depending on some drivers, if they have the budget, they can move up to Formula 2. And if they don't, they, you know, either go to GT cars, GT Endurance, DTM, Formula E even. So, like, they just, you know, if there is no budget for Formula 2, they can change their paths to GT racing.
Would that be interesting for year 2? Or are you totally focused on the Formula series? What's your plan?
I mean, like, yeah, I really wanted to move up to FIA Formula 3, but, you know, with the budget, it's quite difficult to even reach F3. Mm-hmm. So we're probably going to, you know, try going into endurance racing, probably go for an LMP3 or LMP2. And, you know,
cool.
With the family, my father wants to do it as well. So we might do, you know, an Alcobaci racing team.
That would be crazy. Your sister Hamda is racing with you in F3 Asia right now. And it's actually so funny. I met Sophia Flörsch, mm-hmm. who just finished Le Mans in the LMP2 series over here in Munich with my basketball team. She came to visit a basketball game. And that was the first time for me combining my two worlds, basketball and racing. So how are you guys, like, pursuing that as a family? Are you talking a lot about racing? Are you trying to improve each other? Are you trying to make yourselves better?
Yeah, we always, like, give each other advice, tips. We try to, like, coach each other in a way. We don't argue. We don't, you know, be arrogant towards each other. We just help each other, mm-hmm. give each other, you know, advice. We show each other's onboards, our data, so we're, like, sharing it together.
What's your relationship with your sister like? Are you guys competing against each other though? Are you seeing each other as competition?
Yeah, we did compete in Formula 3 Asia, and I think we're going to compete again next year. In the beginning, like, it was fine. We were not arguing or anything, but then there came a time during qualifying, she got annoyed. She told me, she came up to me and she was like, "You blocked me." And we had a really big fight because she blamed me for her position. And I'm just like, "Listen, it's not my fault." And like, yeah, it was really funny because the team didn't know how to react or how to like push us away from each other because we were fighting.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh my God. So, interesting though.
Yeah. That was the only time we had like an argument. It was like the last race. Yep. So yeah, that was the only time we argued.
Good though. Good for you. You should focus on the race.
Yeah.
So I already found out a little bit about your goals, maybe about an Al-Kubaisi racing team at some point and moving up into the Formula Series. What about role models? Do you have role models, Amna?
Yeah, I have role models. My father is my role model. My sister, my little sister, she's also my role model. My mom. I look up to my family a lot and I consider them as role models, like especially my mom. Growing up, she grew up in a poor family and everything. And when she came to the family, she was working to provide for the family until, like, thankfully, you know, my dad started to get a job. After he finished his studies, he got a really good job. So I see my mom as a role model. She's very determined. She's very committed into like getting things done, very helpful, generous, selfless. So I see my mom in that aspect of a role model. And my father, he's very committed. When he wants to do, when he wants to get things done, he gets them done. He's always, you know, he always used to tell me, you have to study, and I didn't really care about it until like I saw like his education system and like how he finished his studies in 3 years, so I was, you know, fascinated by him as well. So both parents, I see them in different aspects.
And what is it, or what values does your sister bring to you?
The value my sister brings to me, she's young and confident. I remember how she was before, like she was very shy, just like me. She was very shy. She didn't stand up for herself. She told me, like, she would tell me, "I'm not good enough. I'm like just, you know, doing this as a hobby and I will never get anywhere." And then seeing her now, like being the first woman to win a podium, claim third place in a podium in the Italian F4. Like, that's like a huge step to how she was like 7 years ago. So yeah, I also see her as a role model in that way.
It's so interesting to hear that you consider yourself rather shy, because you don't seem shy, not now. And, you know, looking at all your articles, your interviews, your videos that are out there, you don't seem shy. You seem super confident. You seem super firm about your goals, your mission. How do these two things go together? Because I feel like there are a lot of girls out there who do feel shy and who don't step into their power because of, you know, especially in sports, their surroundings too.
Yeah. I mean, you can be shy when people talk about, let's say, if you're talking about personal things or, you know, you meet someone for the first time, but you can be shy in that aspect. But when it comes to talking, let's say, about something you're passionate about and people criticize or, you know, try to put you down, that's when you, like, that's not okay. And you shouldn't really, like, stay quiet about that. You need to stand up for yourself, you know, stand up for what you say, for what you think is right. You shouldn't really allow them to talk you down. You should say, like, this is like crossing the line. This is not okay.
Yeah. Set boundaries. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so interesting. You mentioned this. Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
You mentioned this passion again, and I feel like this passion for racing, this passion for motorsports gives you purpose and gives you the confidence that you need in order to thrive in that environment. Maybe you can explain to me what racing really means to you. What is it that ignites the spark in you?
Yeah, what racing really means to me is, like, you know, it's a different world. It's a world where I prefer to be in. You not just go to different tracks around the world, but also, like, you meet different drivers, you improve yourself. The racing, like, when you step into a race weekend, it's unpredictable. Like, even if there's qualifying or anything, it's unpredictable. You can sometimes maybe even win a race from last position. So that's what I like about the race weekends. They're very unpredictable. And the cars and, you know, always trying to find the limit, fighting for positions. You're not separated from, there's no, like, separation between male or female. It's everybody race as one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's what I really find it, you know, fascinating about the sport.
You just said that you're meeting people from all over the world, and you guys are also raised in Europe, in Italy, to be precise. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest difference, or is there any difference at all, between racing in Asia and racing in Europe, like in the different Formula series?
I mean, there isn't really a difference because the same drivers from Europe come to Formula 3 Asia. So it's literally like the same competition, just in the Middle East. So, yeah, like, it's basically the same, like, more, a lot of drivers, same drivers from Europe. The cars are the same as well. So it's just, you know, the tracks, it's Yas Marina and Dubai. So, that's the only difference.
I see. And, do you guys, like, not support, but, exchange each other across teams? If you're saying, you know, it's basically the same drivers from all over, do you guys stay in touch? Do you, now that you're respected and all that, do you guys, try to make each other better too? Or is that more like a team thing?
It's more like a team thing. You can't really share, you know, all your data. And some drivers will not even share. Like, they keep things to themselves. They will not help you out. So, it's more so like a friendship on track. I have a few, like, drivers I'm good friends with that were from my team, and then, you know, they changed teams, but we're still friends. I have, through Instagram as well, we stay in touch. I watch their races, and yeah, I mean, we've built, like, a friendship, like, because we've been in this racing world for around 9 years, so we became, you know, not new to the eye anymore.
And just thinking about, you know, relationships that you have, I had to think back to what you said in the very beginning about you being in university and not really telling anyone what to do. What is it that you study? Because that was super interesting to me. And how do you combine the study requirements, basically, with the crazy race calendar?
Yeah, so I study records management and archival sciences in Sorbonne University. And it's a new major. It just came out like two to three years ago. It just came out. And how I manage is... there's always, like, time management through anything you do. You just have to put effort. Like, during the race weekend, let's say I have an exam during, which I had a lot during F3 Asia. I would.
Really?
Yep. I had a lot of exams.
During the weekend.
Yep. During the race weekends. I mean, Sorbonne, like, when they do the exams, sometimes they prefer the weekends to have them done. So, with me, like, I would, send them an email, explain, you know, what I'm doing, even though I don't want to tell them, I have to explain myself. and, you know, try to find a solution, like, I will do this assignment instead. Like, you can always find solutions to and time management. I would bring my work on track, so during my free time, like, I would study or I would finish off some assignments. We have this option as well, like, to go online in case, like, we're super busy or we have work or something or we're out of the country. I would also do my classes online during a track walk. So I mean, there is time management. You just have to put the effort.
Can you tell me again what it is that you're studying? I didn't quite get it. And what is it that you are trying to pursue with that very precise course?
So I study records management and archival sciences. It's in you. Yeah. Archival is basically like, you know, stored documents, stored information or art, photos or anything. So yeah, it's a new major, and it's basically about, you know, trying to safekeep archives, old archives or paintings or, you know, historical documents. It's basically like, you know, related to history and almost close to like archaeology almost. Yeah.
That is so interesting. How did you think of that?
It was a new major and I was interested. I like to try new things, and I thought, like, you know, most of the majors that I've heard, you know, engineering or, you know, psychology, even though psychology is interesting, but it's very common. I was like, oh, I want to try something, you know, that's not very common. And when I mention it, people are like, you know, surprised. What is this major? Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I took it. I wanted to try it out. And I actually really, really enjoy it. It's an interesting major.
Very cool. And then you said you're studying at Sorbonne, which is the university in Paris, right? So is it an online thing or do you actually go there?
We have campus here in the UAE. We have their branch.
Okay.
Yeah, so I go on campus. Sometimes we do have the option to go Paris. But now with this whole COVID, I think it's not there anymore.
Yeah, I see. Oh, cool. Very interesting, though. And then are you rather studying just in order to do something and to, like, broaden your horizon? Or are you actually planning on starting a career in a direction of archival?
No, actually, I just did it, you know, to take a diploma. My dad told me, like, in case racing or, you know, the career that you're already going through, it does not work for you, you can apply for a job. He's like, this is like for plan B.
Yeah.
For me, I've always wanted to start a business, and I'm looking through, like, you know, what new businesses I can put through here in the UAE, because, again, there's so many things that are very common. So I like to bring something that's different.
Yeah. Have you thought of anything yet, or is that just the broad idea?
It's still a broad idea. I was thinking, you know, like, probably a car museum. We don't really have car museums here.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I was thinking, you know, racing museum, actually. There isn't any here, so it would be interesting to maybe open.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Le Mans, actually, since your father raced there?
Yeah, I've been there since, like, 2015. I used to go there, yeah.
So cool. So have you seen that museum there as well?
It's amazing. It's, like, out of this world.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Oh,
yeah,
so cool.
I want to, like, mix up. Bring something from Le Mans, bring something from Mercedes in Germany, something from Italy.
That sounds so cool. And that's actually the perfect transition to speak a little bit about your culture, because I know so little about the UAE culture. It's a very young country. You just turned, I just turned 50 this year. Let's just start with the museum idea and let's stick with the car culture. Do people really appreciate racing over there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so surprised. Like, there are people who are also pursuing karting in the UAE. There's a lot of people are like car fanatics, even girls, they're car fanatics. So
cool.
They make clubs, you know, like there's a motorbike club, there's, you know, a car club, and people go on like cruises or like they go on 1,000 kilometer car ride. So it's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. And then maybe help me a little bit with this. We just spoke about that you drove that Formula E car. I think it was 2018 or 2019. And that was actually the year when in Saudi Arabia, the driving ban for women was abandoned. What is that like over there in the UAE? I feel like the culture and especially the situation for women is way more advanced.
Yeah, in Saudi Arabia, they're our sister country. When they've lifted the ban, it was something we were super happy about. It's a first step. And even like before the ban was lifted, there were a few female racing drivers who raced in Europe from Saudi Arabia. So already there are women trying to pursue this sport. And I also see, you know, Saudi Arabian females karting in Saudi Arabia, you know, competing as well. So I really hope, you know, it starts to evolve and, you know, we can see if female Saudi Arabian in F1 as well.
Well, that would be the big goal to finally see any female in F1 for sure. What would you describe the UAE culture like, though? What can we imagine it like to be?
So the UAE culture is very diverse. I wouldn't say westernized. We still, you know, keep a hold of our culture and traditions. But it's very, very diverse. You'd be surprised when you meet some locals. You know, some of them even have as good as an English accent as me.
Yeah.
So, and like people have developed already hobbies. Some like skiing, some like running. Yeah, so it's interesting. Like many people in the UAE take so much sports, like a variety kind of sports. There is even ice hockey. Like we have an ice hockey team.
Wait, in the UAE? Locals.
Yes,
no way.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it's evolved like quite quickly. We have ice skaters as well. Who are trying to compete in the Olympics from the UAE and female as well. So we are quite diverse and we've evolved a lot.
That's so cool. What would you say is the biggest difference or what is something that has struck you while traveling to Europe culture-wise?
Honestly, I feel like everything is different to what I'm used to back home. For sure, first of all, it's the weather. It's very different from here.
Yeah.
But like the food.
Good or
I
bad?
I always enjoy. Oh, really good. Really, okay. Really good. So in Italy, Spain, like the food is amazing. The style, the architecture from different places in Europe. I mean, I'm always fascinated with like old buildings and old paintings. It's my favorite thing. Like I love to, I really love historical things since I was really young. So I always look at that aspect as well.
Very, very cool. I'm sure that all these trips have broadened your horizon as well. But I would like to move on now to the second part of the conversation. And I have these three little, what are these, bubbles? And you can pick one. And we're going to continue with the conversation in, the way that you're picking the next step. Which one would you like?
Which bubble?
Yes, which of the bubbles? Can you see me?
No, I can't see.
Ah, okay. So I'm just going to pick one for you.
Okay.
The first one is the... Okay, that's a little topic that you brought for us. It's like, in soccer terms, the throw-in, like when the guys are throwing in the ball from the sideline. What are you throwing in for us today?
Ooh, what I'm throwing in is, you know, some sharing my story, sharing some challenges that I've been through in case any female or male who wants to pursue, you know, a career in racing would already, you know, have a guideline on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah, I was wondering, actually, how do you deal with moments of, like, fear? For example, in, like, a crash, and I think you had a crash, if I researched that correctly. How do you deal with, you know, pressure? How do you deal with actually feeling anxious sometimes?
Yeah, I had a really big one during F3 Asia a few months ago. And honestly, like, during a crash, we've had our teams, you know, telling us if you're ever going through a crash, you need to take your hands off the steering wheel to avoid any, you know, wrist or hand injury. But mentally,
didn't know
that. Yeah, you need to take your hands off because, like, with the front wheels, they can, you know, just flip or, you know, whip the steering wheel and it can really damage your hands. It happened a few times, but thank goodness my hands were flexible enough to not get hurt. But yeah, mentally, like, it's hard to get over. Like, with my crash, I had a fear of being behind a car for, like, 3 races. Yeah, so it's just, you know, trying to overcome that fear, like, you know, if any, you have a brake, like, anything happens, you can brake. Mentally, I just, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, it happened once, and it happened as an accident. Like, somebody stopped, somebody did not move on the grid. So then, like, I started to get over that fear and try to, you know, start getting used to the fact that it's happened once and it's an unfortunate incident.
Does incidents like these, like, raise pressure on you mentally? I heard in one of your interviews you always feel pressure once you're on track because you're a girl some kind, because you feel like you have to prove yourself more than the others. And, you know, if a crash like that even happened, does that, like, make you doubt your confidence a little bit? Or how do you come back into your power?
Yeah, I mean, with that incident, I mean, it's, like, not an incident that I caused on purpose. It's an incident
obviously
happens really often. I couldn't see the yellow flags because there were multiple cars in front of me. So I didn't assume anyone stopped on the grid. So with that, I mean, it made me, like, take 3 steps back. So I was improving throughout the weekend and I wasn't racing for over a year. And my competitors have been racing nonstop for like 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So it made me, like, take 3 steps back and, like, I think I should, like, slow down a bit because I just had a big crash and I think that's because I was over-pushing, over-trying, you know, to overtake and then, you know, I put myself in danger. So, yeah, I mean, I had to start, you know, building that confidence again.
Did your coach, did your team help you with that as well? What was the conversation like?
Yeah, I mean, I had my engineer and he would tell me, you know, it's unfortunate and it happens to many drivers. I mean, they were trying to help, like, calm me down and tell me, you know, you're not the only one. It happened to multiple people and that it's okay and it happens. So, like, they really, like, tried to, like, get in my head and help me, you know, get that confidence back again.
Yeah.
So, they were very helpful. And, like, especially the team, they were really helpful in, like, you know, trying to help me gain that confidence back and didn't make it seem like it was a big accident, like when I came back in. So yeah, that's good. really,
Did you talk about the like confidence thing with your sister and your dad as well?
My dad was really scared because he was behind the whole incident.
He saw it.
So he was really scared. So he came to me and he asked me, like, do you want to, like, continue or do you want to stop? I'm like, no, I want to continue, because I was crying.
And he thought
I was crying. He thought I was crying because, like, I wanted to stop. And I was like, no, my car is gone. So, yeah, so... My father and my sister are also, like, they want to learn from me, like, with the confidence. They sometimes tell me I'm overconfident.
Well, that's all right, though. Maybe we need that. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I tell them, you know, it's better to be overconfident than hamda. Like, as a joke.
I see. That's good, though. And coming back to, like, the entire, you said that it's tough to get a cockpit, it's tough to get the sponsors and everything. I can imagine that a crash is super expensive, too. And, you know, money just rules this sport so much. Looking at your social media appearance and all of that, you really seem to have mastered the whole brand building, though. How important is that for you in order to be able to pursue this big goal of advancing in the racing world?
Yeah, I mean, like, now there is this new concept of content creators, and you see, like, content creators, they start building a huge following and they start, you know, getting a lot of opportunities, brand collaborations and so on and so forth. So I saw that and I was like, I have nothing to lose. I might as well try to be like a content creator, try to make some content related to racing. And I realized how much people were into that. They really liked that, you know, topic, content creating as a female driver. So I started to get a lot of followers. I started to get a lot of brand deals. I actually got a few sponsors as well, just from content creating. So I think social media is vital for a driver. It can like play a huge role in help you in whether gaining sponsors or gaining like a huge following, gaining a lot of supporters, fans. And it's super vital as a racing driver or an athlete as well.
Yeah. And what has your experience been so far, except for, you know, what you just mentioned about the possibility of getting like endorsements? Is your followership supportive? Have you experienced any like bullying digitally?
I mean, there are a lot of people who will comment, and I've got so many like people who would comment, you know, just because I'm a female Arab, they assume I'm already a millionaire. So yeah. I think people don't understand, like, in the UAE, it's not like we have a backyard and we're growing money.
Wow.
It's just, you know, hardworking men. Some families are fortunate, some are not, so it's not, you know, all the same. So these type of comments, I would just, you know, block the account. If you have nothing nice to say, it's better to not say it at all. But if you decide to put it out there, then I don't welcome this type of negativity, and I just block the accounts.
Yeah, best thing you could do. And that actually leads me to the next category that I would like to talk about. It's the so-called head coach category. So you just said how you deal with negativity in the social media area. You already told us that your family is kind of a role model for you. And now I would like to dig a little bit deeper, because I always ask my guests here, who or what is an actual head coach for them in times of adversity, or who has been something or someone to you in the past? Do you remember a person or maybe an activity? Someone said it's running for her. That like clears your mind or gets you back into balance, or, you know, is the light at the end of the tunnel, basically.
For me, that would be music.
Nice.
Yeah. I think everyone can relate when it comes to music. When people are going through something, they just put on their headphones and just shut off from the world. So I think some would relate.
For sure. What kind of music is your music?
Oh, I like techno. Mm-hmm. I like remix, you know, some DJ remix. I'm a huge St. John fan. Mm-hmm. And Linkin Park.
Interesting.
So I have, so I have a variety. Like, it all depends on my mood.
Obviously,
If I feel like listening to Linkin Park, I'll play Linkin Park. If I feel like listening to St. John, then I'll play St. John.
That's so cool. What is your pre-race playlist, or like, I don't know, the three pre-race songs that you listen to get into the zone?
It's Linkin Park
for sure.
Since the beginning of karting, I've always been listening to Linkin Park from the start of my career. So yeah, it's a tradition.
Favorite song?
Castle of Glass.
You're like, sorry,
that's
sorry,
my favorite.
Linkin Park. Sorry for stuttering a second.
My bad.
Interesting. I definitely have to put that one into the show notes. So cool. And that's a great hack, coach, because as you said it, music is just as versatile as human emotions are, basically. And you can, like, with the right song, put you into the, you know, invincible mode, or if you're sad or happy, you know, it can go either way. So that's a very good hack, coach. I like that one. All right, Amna, one last category to talk about is a little shootout. I prepared a couple of quick questions that I would like you to answer. And I would just shoot. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Karting or going fast in a regular car?
Karting.
Why the number 88?
It's been a family lucky number for tradition from our very beginning, like start of the family. So family after family, 88 was always our number.
Interesting. Any like story to that, or did it just, I don't know, pop up and then everyone went with it?
I think it was the first number plate one of our family members had. They had 88888. And yeah, I think it was like coincidence, and they're like, oh, this is a lucky number, because nothing happened to me with my first car, no incidents,
I
nothing.
Oh, nice.
And
Hamda is racing under the number 99. Is that just the advancement because you already had the 88, or?
Actually, it was me who took 99 because we were playing rock, paper, scissors, and she won.
Damn.
So she took 88.
I see. Then I maybe mixed it up. Yeah. So you're racing number 99 right now, and Hamda's racing 88? Oh, sorry. So I mixed those two up. But still a great story about the 88.
Yeah.
Which of your races was your favorite so far?
My favorite would be the Yas Marina during the F1 Grand Prix when I first won. To step on an F1 podium was, you know, breathtaking, and I was in awe. So
yeah,
that was my favorite.
I can imagine. Good one. Good one to pick right here. Would you rather travel or rather stay at home?
Oh, travel. I'd rather travel.
Like wherever, whenever, whatever a reason?
For any reason at all. Mm-hmm. I love to visit different places and, you know, see how different, you know, each world is. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Good answer. Favorite country you've traveled to?
Favorite country? Ooh, I would say Zanzibar.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Amazing.
Big one. Culture, weather, vibe.
It's just beautiful. Like, I thought the Maldives was amazing. Then I went to Zanzibar and out of this world.
Okay, gotta go. Gotta go then. What would you say is your worst character feature?
Worst character?
Again, you're overconfident, so maybe you don't have one.
I get irritated quite quickly.
Irritated, I see. Like, rather by your sister or by someone who's driving badly in front of you on a regular street?
Anyone. Anyway, sometimes like I just get so irritated by them. It just happens like out of the blue.
That's okay. That's very fair. Yeah. Good to know. What's your favorite sport beside racing?
I like jet skiing.
Oh, good one.
It's so fun. Wakeboarding as well. Mm-hmm. We do some wakeboarding with the family. Anything that has an engine to it, honestly. Quad dune bashing, drag racing.
That's cool.
In a proper track, you know, a very safe. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Speaking of like all the water sports, do you guys live actually close to the sea? I just know that you are in the UAE. I don't know where exactly you are.
Yeah, we live by the sea. So we have our yachts and our jet ski, and we wakeboard every now and then.
That's so cool. Well, perfect then. First words mm-hmm. besides racing. Oh, the worst crash of your career? Was that the one we talked about before?
Yeah, that was the worst crash of my career. Nothing tops that.
Nothing tops that. Hopefully stays like that too.
Yeah, hopefully.
And now the most important question. Who is the best racer in your family?
I think...
I'm going to cause a little family tragedy over that one, maybe.
I'm going to say we're all the best in different aspects.
All right. You have to stay diplomatic, I guess. But actually, let's dig a little bit deeper here. That was very interesting. You said in another interview that your sister's like a very smooth driver. You would consider yourself mm-hmm. more like of an aggressive driver. What's your dad like?
My dad is just like me. We're both aggressive. So we understand each other's driving style, uh-huh. but my sister is super smooth. So we don't understand her driving style. It's like so easy for us to say, you know, just go for an overtake, just push. And she's there. She's like, no, I can't. No. So like, it's super hard for us to understand her point of view.
Interesting.
So yeah.
That's very interesting. And then mm-hmm. What is it that defines a smooth driver? So obviously she has to have a like this killer mindset on the track. And has to overtake at some point. Yeah, you go.
Yay. Sorry. Yeah. So basically, like as a smooth driver, they take things very, you know, safe. They're smooth with the way they handle the car. They're like always, you know, two steps ahead when it comes to like when they want to overtake, they will wait like after 2-3 corners mm-hmm. and when they think it's the right time. And yeah. So for an aggressive driver, you know, they find a gap, they just go for it. They don't wait. They just go for that gap immediately. And the handling is, you know, very aggressive with the steering and everything. So
interesting.
Yeah, two types of driving styles. Yeah.
Very, very cool. All right, that was my little shootout already. And there's just one little thing that I would like to speak about before we come to an end here. Because, you know, the chances of actually being a successful female in this world is actually kind of tough. So I always care a lot about how people like envision or visualize their goals and like Yeah, no, they're goals, period. Do you use affirmations? Mm-hmm. Do you manifest things? Do you write things down? Do you meditate about stuff? Or, I don't know, are you religious? Maybe you're sending little prayers up. Share this with us.
Yeah. I do pray, and I do ask for things. I do manifest as well. And, like, I don't say I want to get this. I say I will get this. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to put yourself as if you're, like, you're already pursuing it. Mm-hmm. I think people say fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. And I stand by this because, yeah, like, if you actually, like, think you're an F1 driver, eventually you'll be one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
That's an example. That's just an example. I'm not saying it's true, but it's just an example. Like, if you think you can do something, and the more you put your mind to it and the more you're determined to get it, you know, over with, then it's more likely to happen.
That's very interesting. And when you're saying you use that example of being an F1 driver, what goes into this thought? Like, certain behaviors, or do you just add more details to that vision every single time you think about it, or once you get set foot in your F3 car, you just envision being on the Grand Prix track right now, or mm-hmm. what is it?
Yeah, for me, like, when I step into the car, I'm like, I'm on grid with a few potential F1 drivers. That does not mean it's not me as well. So everyone on this grid is considered like an F1 driver, and we're all fighting, you know, for, let's say, podium finish. But mm-hmm. For me, it's quite difficult to reach that point because I've always, you know, just jumped straight into the race weekend, mm-hmm. no training, no, mm-hmm. no testing sessions, nothing. So it's always like catching the flag. And sometimes I do better than the ones who've been competing mm-hmm. for a very long time. So I just need to find that, you know, gap of having the same track time as my competitors.
So interesting. Do you have less practice because of what? Do you do sim racing? What's the situation there?
Yeah, it's, you know, the budget. Yeah. It's really expensive to be training in Europe to rent the car and go on track. So it's super pricey, and most of the guys, you know, they have good sponsors, good backup, so it's hard to compete with that.
I see. Amna, thank you so much all the way until here. I hope my little blackout moment will not ruin the entire thing. I found this so interesting. I appreciate you being open and sharing everything with me and us so much. And
of course, thank you for having me.
Of course. And as I said, this is the podcast where my guests have to work a little bit. You get to close the episode 2 with a little pep talk. I mean, you've already had little bits and pieces of that throughout the entire interview, obviously. But now you get to finish this one more time with a pep talk to every girl or every boy even who's listening, and tell them why they have to believe in whatever it is that they're fighting for and dreaming of, and never stop trying to pursue this.
So for me to answer that for young girls or boys, you know, you should always put your head down. If you believe in yourself, that's the only thing that matters. You shouldn't do things for praise or for other people's approval. Just do things for yourself, and if it makes you happy, then that's more than enough. Keep persisting, keep pushing. Don't let one setback stop you and help you, or push for you to give up. You know, as people say, never give up, and it's really important to never give up because you'll never know where you're gonna reach if you have given up. So keep persisting.
Perfect. And keep persisting yourself too. I want to see you in that F1 cockpit one day. Thank you so much, Amna.
Thank you so much. Take care.